Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Thanks for tuning in to our bonus episode preview. This is just a short sample of this week's exclusive Patreon episode. You can hear the episode in its entirety by becoming a member at patreon.com/indoctrination, where you'll gain access to all of our exclusive episodes and merchandise. I am so happy to have you, Vadlaor, on the show again. Your episodes were very, very interesting for a lot of people, and they get quoted a lot, actually, which I've been meaning to tell you, where people will listen to the episode and say, well, just like, you know, Yuval said, and it's very nice to see you. It's been a long time.
That's right. Yeah. Great seeing you. Great to be back on the podcast. I'm glad that people found what I said last time interesting. My book is coming along. I would say it's probably 80, 85% done, or a first draft done. But if anybody wants to read a draft, they can email me at yuvalaor@gmail.com and I will email them a draft.
Oh, nice. Okay. Oh, good. All right. That's great to know. So before we get started talking about what we're going to talk about, what is happening in your life? I mean, besides this book, which sounds very exciting, and what else are you doing?
Well, I'm back at my place. I was traveling a little bit, went to Egypt, saw the Great Pyramid, you know, the most reliable inducer of awe, probably for the last 4,500 years. Yeah, other than that, not much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. Reliable inducer of awe. I love that expression. And so when you see those sorts of things, even though you study awe, is that what you feel? Or do you watch the people who are watching what you're watching?
Well, I mean, a little bit, but yeah, I mean, I distinguish between terrestrial awe and more genuine or you know, stronger awe experiences. And I think that they're in a way similar to being afraid when you're watching a horror movie and being afraid when you're swimming in the ocean, you really do see a shark, right? That both of the emotions are fear, but one of them doesn't mean much. You're not really in danger, while the other one does mean much. And I think that with awe, you have a similar distinction between the awe that I would have seeing a whale, seeing the Great Pyramid, and someone that would use that awe to psychologically prove to them that certain things are real, and usually prove to them that they're really real, that they're ultimate truth. So just because it's the same emotion, those are extremely different type of experiences.
Right. Okay. So what's lucky about being able to talk to you about this is that you know about the brain chemistry that's related to this. And I would love for you to be able to explain it, because people know the language of the feeling that they're feeling, but not sort of what's creating it and what parts of the brain are getting kind of, you know, sparked by these sorts of things and how it affects us.
Yeah. Well, in general, emotions, They can be induced directly through seizures, right? In which case, you know, it's not a usual way to have an emotional experience. But normally, emotions are induced through either, you also have emotional contagion, but normally they're induced by judgments, right? So if you judge that you were wronged and the person who wronged you, et cetera, there's a number of conditions, then you will feel anger. But anger is the result of the judgment. Now, what I argue is that what induces our experiences are judgments when people judge things to be sufficiently anomalous, which is a big, you know, what is and is not anomalous greatly depends on what you think is normal or abnormal. There are people who think that everything is anomalous, that everything is awe-inducing. There's people who think that everything's a miracle. But after judging that, and sometimes you can see something that's sufficiently anomalous, but it happened when you went to see a magic show. So you know this is like going to feel fear in a horror movie. You know that, yes, you saw something inexplicable, but you know it doesn't mean anything. Other ways that things can be judged to be anomalous is, for example, encountering a celebrity or seeing something that is extremely impressive, like a work of art. I think we'll get further into the causes of awe and the types of causes of awe when we talk about the functions of the temporal lobe, because there happens to be a really fascinating medical condition called temporal lobe epilepsy. And temporal lobe epilepsy causes neurologists describe the one of the symptoms, and this is not always, but in many cases, of temporal lobe epilepsy as hyper-religiosity. One guy calls it enhanced religiosity, but the rest call it hyper-religiosity. And people with this condition, they have very, very frequent awe experiences, very strong awe experiences. And they usually find themselves in a state of fervor. They're in many, many cases serial converters. So they undergo many religious or even not religious conversions. And even if they're not religious, they could be atheists, but they're very fervent about it. And because of this strange, you know, medical condition, which is, of course, not that common, but you know, can afflict all of us at any moment, right? Because it's epilepsy, it's not mental illness, it's a neurological condition. I think that it can, first of all, it can really teach us a lot about awe, about religiosity in general. But interesting is that from anecdotal evidence, it seems to me like a whole lot of cult leaders show at least the symptoms of temporal lobe epilepsy. Now, I'm not a doctor, not a medical doctor, and certainly not a neurologist. And so I'm not diagnostic in anybody. This is just speculation. But people like L. Ron Hubbard, I think, shows all of the traits of temporal lobe epilepsy, or many, including some of the weird ones that we might get into. But other people like Ellen G. White, I mean, Ayn Rand, of course, she, you know, some consider her to be a religious figure, or, I mean, she did have a cult-like following. But also, you know, I talked to an acquaintance of mine, someone I know, and, you know, he spent some time in a cult when he was young. This was maybe 30 years ago. And, you know, he told me, you know, he was there for 6 months before he, or maybe a year before he left one day, you know, just got up and left. And when I described to him the list of personality traits that are induced by temporal lobe epilepsy, he's like, oh my God, this sounds like my cult leader. Now, this is, of course, another anecdote, right? And if you look at the book Feet of Clay, which I happen to have here, which is an analysis of, it's like six or seven cult leaders, including Bhagwan Rajneesh, also known as Osho, Jim Jones, let's see, also Rudolf Steiner. I think he's a psychologist. He might be a psychiatrist. But this is one of the problems of the division between psychiatry and neurology, which are both medical specifications that study the brain, but yet they do different stuff. He doesn't mention the possibility of epilepsy. Now, this type of epilepsy also was only discovered, it was speculated about in the mid to late 70s. It became established in the 80s, early 80s. So a lot of studies of, for example, L. Ron Hubbard in the 60s, that the Australian government did. They say, well, he seems like he's not schizophrenic, but there's something going on here. Now, this is because it's at the time before this type of epilepsy was even proposed. So I think that, you know, if you look at Wright's book about Scientology, Going Clear, I think is the book.
Yeah. Lawrence Wright.
Yeah. Lawrence Wright. He quotes Scientology's spokesman, who says, well, there's two options. Either L. Ron Hubbard is a con man or he's not a con man. Now, if he's not a con man, then his research might be valid and all this and that. But to think that he is a con man would not write 500,000 pages for Scientology. And this is on top of him being the most published author, right? This is besides that. Who would put so much work for his con? You know, if you're a con man, you're there for profit. But I think that those two options miss a third option, is that he suffers from temporal lobe epilepsy, whose one of its symptoms is graphomania. So writing a whole hell of a lot of text, mountains of texts. And, you know, there's a number of writers that are considered to have temporal lobe epilepsy. Initially, it was called Dostoevsky's epilepsy, because apparently Fyodor Dostoevsky developed it later in his life. And in the book, The Idiot, there's a character who writes a letter that describes a bunch of symptoms that Dostoevsky shouldn't know about. And also in personal letters, Dostoevsky describes his own auras and extreme experiences that made people in the 70s, Geschwind and others, to study it. And initially, they called it Dostoevsky's epilepsy. But let me see, there's a list here of other writers that have been proposed that had this affliction. Is Edgar Allan Poe, Alfred Lord Tennyson, Gustave Flaubert, Lewis Carroll, and Philip K. Dick. Graphomania, that happens if your epilepsy is in the writing side of your brain, right? If it's on the other side, you might just talk all the time. But the other symptoms, so Vincent van Gogh is considered a very strong candidate for having temporal lobe epilepsy, but maybe other things as well. Regarding philosophers, so people say, well, Socrates, but who knows? There's an article about that. But and others, you know, people speculate, but, you know, like Socrates, they say that the Apostle Paul or Ezekiel or all sorts of, but those are fairly distant figures. From that list, you saw there's a lot of really nice guys, really good people who had temporal lobe epilepsy. To get an L. Ron Hubbard, the narcissism, the pathological lying, and all that needs to come from another source. That's the epilepsy is not responsible for that. So there are many, many types of epilepsy. In general, an epilepsy is a scar or a blood clot or something like that that's in the brain. Now, every person's brain is different, and every epilepsy is different because it is a tiny little scar and it could be at a very specific location. But people like Ellen G. White, she got hit in the head, in the side of the head where the temporal lobes are, and since then became a fervent believed that she was chosen, started writing gigantic books, and she is the spiritual leader of the Seventh-day Adventists. So other epilepsies are most famous for giving people grand mal seizures. So grand mal seizures are the ones that we associate with people shaking uncontrollably, etc. So that sometimes happens in temporal lobe epilepsy, but it's not necessary at all. So you can have temporal lobe epilepsy and never have a grand mal seizure. I have an article somewhere that describes like 70-something types of seizures. So there's a bunch of types of seizures. And seizures can actually last for days on end. So yeah, I know actually a temporal lobe patient, and he had deja vu for like 3 days straight, which was a seizure. Even though people can have very ecstatic peak experiences and they have very positive experiences, they are also have horrible, horrible, very scary, very terrifying experiences. It is it can be a very, very debilitating and unpleasant, you know, disease to have. I mean, not disease, condition, but also one of its symptoms, as we'll see, is paranoia. So because of that, it's one of the conditions that prevents people from treating itself. Like depression, which does it differently, with paranoia, people don't disclose to the doctor what is going on, because they might be afraid and not trustful of the doctor. And so that hinders the ability for them to get help. Another problem of getting help is that many times people assume that what's going on is a psychological or psychiatric situation. So because people suddenly, they might have, it's called ideas of reference, where they think that the way they arrange stuff in their house affects the news, for example, or the weather, right? So, you know, all sorts of really strange things, and people are describing all sorts of strange ideas. And then, this is the kind of stuff that people take someone to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And actually, one of the symptoms of temporal lobe epilepsy is that the person was misdiagnosed as having either bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or a psychotic disorder, right? So schizoaffective disorder. So this is neurologists saying those psychiatrists will misdiagnose this. But if you have a misdiagnosis, that means that there's a better chance that you actually have this specific type of epilepsy.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.